This is Always by Karen Faith. Striding with purpose into his smallest but most carefully monitored laboratory, Adelmo picked a bit of microscopic lint off of his pristine lab coat and flicked it away. German by birth, Adelmo was fussy, demanding, and humorless. He was also a MacArthur Fellow, the recipient of a so-called genius grant, so his methods were rarely questioned. The lack of strict oversight or pushback from his leadership allowed Adelmo to take chances that other scientists couldn't. Under diffuse lighting, Adelmo checked first one, then three more chambers quietly burbling away. He was prone to checking in on his most cherished project at least twice a day. For him, observing the specimens and making verbal notes into the end of his pen, which contained a small micro-recorder, was like a meditation. Specimen 1, progressing as expected. Specimen 2, temperature below optimal but not critical. Faulty connector to be analyzed by Jorgensen later today. Specimen 3, growing faster than expected. We suspect the genetics of the subject and should research the husbandry. Specimen 4, normal and on track. The spoken words fluttered up to the cloud, where voice-to-text translated his words into a tidy lab journal app. He'd review and clean them up later, but for now he was awaiting a visit from a dignitary, and everything had to be perfect. Over the past week, he'd driven all of his postdoctoral research assistants and his long-suffering administrative assistant crazy with his meticulous preparations. They muttered about him in the break room without knowing that the ancient building's ventilation system conveyed their every sound to a certain place in Lab 2. There was a small electrical tape X on the floor to remind Adelmo where acoustics were the best. Satisfied that the specimens were fine, the lab was spotless, and he was ready to receive guests, it was to that X marks the spot in Lab 2, down the hall, where he headed next. "I will be so glad when this day is over. Where are we going after?" "Let's do that Irish pub, the one over on Spruce." "Oh, that one called the Harp?" "Yeah, that's it. The first round is on me." "Sweet. I'm going to need 2 or 10 or... You know what? Let's just start with a run of Jameson. Dr. Frank has just about worn me down. Yesterday, I actually drafted a letter of resignation. I was just so done." Adelmo wrote a few notes on a crumpled piece of paper from his pocket. He knew the acoustics worked both ways and avoided the recorder pen while standing on the X. They called him Dr. Frank, meaning Frankenstein, for the exploratory and cutting-edge genetics research that he did. His postdocs often questioned his work, though the net institution never did. He knew how to push the edges right up to that vague gray line between scientific progress and a violation of ethics. The postdocs who questioned him soon went away. Scott was the voice of the letter writer, and Adelmo made a note in ballpoint. He didn't need naysayers. Not today. Not any day. "Dr. Fisher," said Melissa with her characteristic sharp tone, meant to snap him out of a reverie. "The guard at Mulberry Gate called. They've just passed security. At the door in 10 minutes. Adelmo nodded. "Good. Tell Emily and Jasper to meet me in the lab. What about Scott?" Adelmo scratched his chin thoughtfully. "I saw an email from receiving that the new spectrometer is here. Tell Scott to conduct receiving inspection. If good, have him coordinate with logistics to have it installed. Logistics knows where it goes." "Very good," Melissa said, spinning on her heel to exit. He liked Melissa. When she started, she was sloppy and undisciplined, but he'd molded her into a perfect assistant. She could predict his needs and knew how to aggressively block his calendar. He wished he could have 2 more just like her. 3 enormous black SUVs turned the corner and lumbered up the drive. Paper signs marked 3 reserved parking spots, and in well-coordinated fashion, the vehicles parked while men in dark suits poured from the flanking vehicles. Major Brody Jones, chief aide to the general, slid out of the center vehicle and smoothed the front of his uniform slacks. With aching joints and an air of fatigue, 5-star General Max Emerson emerged from the vehicle, found his footing, and strode with purpose towards the building's front door as security flanked in around him. "You watching the time, Jones?" "Yes, General." "Expectations are low." "Yes, General." "What's this kook's name?" "Fisher, sir. Dr. Adelmo Fisher." "Adelmo?" "Yes, sir." "Kraut?" "Yes, sir." The general grunted with a nod as Jones opened the door to allow his ingress. A tall, cool woman in a dark suit said, "Welcome, General Emerson. Right this way." Melissa badged them into 3 different doors down the long corridor and noticed that at each doorway, 1 or 2 of the security crew peeled off and stood to the side. She'd seen her fair share of dignitaries, and this level of security meant the general was somebody important. She'd done research and had been unable to find any information about him. Not even a press release from when the Army made him a 5-star. She called in a few favors with trusted insiders and still came up blank. The general was a ghost with good security. She had a pretty good idea what that meant. A demo delivered a brief discussion of his research in a dumbed-down way for laypersons. He gave the general the same talk he'd delivered to a visiting class of 8th graders last week. He had about the same respect for the military as he did for 8th graders. Well, that wasn't quite true. 8th graders could still turn into something useful. Army generals were beyond hope. What you're about to see is highly confidential. The work is groundbreaking, and we need to protect it at all costs. Is that understood? The general fixed Adelma with a hard stare and pointed to the stars on his collar, saying, "You think I'm a security risk?" "What about them?" Adelma said, indicating the others in the room. The general turned to his staff. "Only Jones and me. The rest of you stay out here." The black suits nodded and took a step back. "Proceed," said the general. Adelma led the two men into his inner sanctum. Other than his own team, no one had visited the special lab, not even the director of his own institution. He was equal measures of excited and nervous. "General Emerson, I'd like to introduce you to two very talented scientists. This is Dr. Emily Jorgensen, and this is Dr. Jasper Schultz. They have been integral to this work." The general shook hands, then said, "Let's get to it. I'm on a tight schedule." "Absolutely," Adelma said, then led the way into the area with the four chambers. Is that a lamb?" the general asked. "Yes, chamber one is a lamb, chamber two is a piglet, three a calf, and four a fawn. We found these species to be the best research subjects." "What exactly am I seeing here?" "In rough terms, what you see is an artificial uterus. This clear sac is made from a polycarbonate blend that is both soft and flexible. The envelope is filled with electrolytes that mimic amniotic fluid. The balance of minerals in the fluid varies slightly by species, but we've become very good at tuning that in. The umbilical cord is attached to this specially designed mechanism that provides nutrition. These monitors regulate the environment. Movement is normal and exactly what the fetus would do in the womb. You can see that the calf is taking practice breaths of amniotic fluid just now. We've grown 20 such animals, which are thriving and are virtually indistinguishable from animals born from a mother's womb."
"Fascinating. And what about humans?"
"We see no reason why this wouldn't work with humans, but as you know, the governance for human trials is quite rigorous. Approval is 2 years away at a minimum."
"What if you had both the money and the approval to begin human trials immediately?"
"It would depend on the expectations of the research, but I would have no troubles beginning right away."
Emily and Jasper glanced at each other, then at Jones, then down at the floor.
"Jones, why don't you take these two outside and discuss schedules?"
"Yes, General," he said, then led Jasper and Emily from the room.
Once the door closed, General Emerson fixed Adelma with a roomy-eyed stare.
"Here's the truth. The Army needs soldiers. Kids are not signing up in the numbers they used to, but it's more than that. The Army supports the Space Force in their long-term missions. We found evidence of life-sustaining planets well outside our solar system, far enough away that using the current flight technology, a 20-year-old would be an elderly man by the time they arrive. I want to outfit our ship with several of your gizmos. Through a third party, we've quietly bought a bankrupt cryogenics facility and taken ownership of a large inventory of embryos. We have enough embryos to create a whole army many times over, but we need a way to grow them. The plan looks like this. We outfit our capsule with these chambers and a few people to run these things. We have a rolling plan of growing new soldiers to be trained by the older humans, and then they in turn farm and train the next generation. By the time we arrive at our destination, we should have a wide range of soldiers of various ages and training to support any hostile conflicts. If the planet is populated, we take it by force. If the planet is uninhabited, we build a colony. Your science fosters exploration. What do you say?"
Adelma thought about it. "There are some logistics to work out."
"Of course."
"And compensation."
"Money is not an issue."
"For you, perhaps, General."
"Let me have a few moments to discuss figures with Jones, okay?"
"Of course. Why don't you and Major Jones use the break room? Help yourself to any food and beverages you find."
"Most accommodating, thank you."
"Certainly, right this way."
Adelma shooed away his postdocs and sent Melissa to sit at her desk in reception. Alone, he stood on the X and listened, scribbling notes and formulating a plan.
"I was prepared to be disappointed, but this is good," said the general. "We need to lock this down. What do we have in our war chest?"
"Our line item from Congress looks to be $82 million, sir. We carried over 25. If the president signs the budget, we're just over 100. We operate on 60 or so and can go up to 40 for this.
but I suggest 10 and see where we go. If we spend 20, we still got a great bargain.
Hmm. Let me see what I can do.
Say, Addy, let's go back to your lab. I want to take a look at those chambers again.
Of course, follow me.
The general closed the door behind them and got straight to the point. Man to man, I can use this. What do we need to get to work?
Before we talk numbers, I need to show you another part of my research. It's over here.
I just want to lock this down, said the general.
You'll want to see this. Not even my assistants know about it.
Adelma took a key out of his pocket and unlocked the cover over a number pad, punched in a sequence, then used another key from a chain around his neck to unlock the door. The sealed room inhaled as the door swung open.
Adelma turned on a light switch, and the general followed him inside. Looking around, the general's eyes went wide.
Using a similar technology to the artificial uterus, I'm able to tweak the amniotic fluid in a certain way to suspend life.
Under his breath, the general muttered, 6, 8, 10. You've got a dozen adult humans in here. Who are they?
General, I think this technology might fit your plan. Imagine training a 20-year-old Special Forces soldier, suspending them in my chambers, and releasing them exactly when needed. You grow your army in flight and use these chambers to preserve the best of the best to lead the fresh troops.
The general looked from chamber to chamber.
You can reanimate them? Fully? With no detriment to brain or physical power?
Yes.
No loss of memory or physical ailments?
No. It's as if they go back into the womb in a suspended state and are reborn intact, just as needed.
It's genius.
I have one last thing to show you.
There can't be more.
Through here, General.
They entered a room in the corner that was the size of a small closet, and there, under a focused spotlight, was what looked like an ordinary 3D printer. The General looked at Adelma with a shrug.
I know what that is, son.
Of course, but I'm a genetics and matter specialist. I have modified this 3D printer. It will create anything you want.
I fail to see how this...
There would be no need to carry food or water or any provisions when it could be created on the printer. No need to carry spare parts. This easily creates duplicates. Any mineral, any metal, anything. Only minimal resources are needed to feed the printer. It will transform, replicate, duplicate, and expand simple matter. For a flight as long and critical as you describe, I suggest 3 units. 2 running fully operational and 1 backup. General, you can transport already trained forces, create new soldiers, feed and outfit them all in the space the size of this small lab. That has to be worth something.
The general stepped back into the room with the human chambers and ran tallies in his head, tapping his fingers, adding and subtracting the numbers. It was perfect.
What's it going to take to close this deal?
It won't be cheap.
No, I imagine not.
Money, of course, but I need assurances.
Go on.
Money. Freedom from liability of any sort, Adelma said, nodding to the bodies in the chambers.
The general's face remained passive.
And a Nobel. I'll write up what for you make the award happen, this year.
That's it?
Let's see. A lot of money, indemnification, and a Nobel? Yeah, that's it.
Pending negotiation of the dollars, Doctor, you have a deal.
The two men shook hands and the general left. Adelma smiled to himself. He had just found the perfect application of his life's work. He walked over to Chamber 12, his newest subject, and looked at the male human inside while devices pumped life-sustaining fluid.
And you see, Scott, that is why you never question my methods. I am always right.
Adelma opened the sealed door, turned off the light, and turned back over his shoulder to look into the room.
Always.